Chapter 3, Fundamentals of Operations. There are not more than 5 musical notes, yet the combinations of these 5 give rise to more melodies than can ever be heard. There are not more than 5 primary colors, yet in combination they produce more hues than can ever be seen. There are not more than 5 cardinal tastes, yet combinations of them yield more flavors than can ever be tasted. Sun Tzu. This chapter describes the Army's operational concept, multi-domain operations. It provides an overview of multi-domain operations and describes it in terms of tenets, imperatives, an operational approach, a strategic framework, and an operational framework. Section 1, Multi-Domain Operations, the Army's Operational Concept. The Army's operational concept is multi-domain operations. Multi-domain operations are how Army forces contribute to and operate as part of the joint force. Army forces, enabled by joint capabilities, provide the lethal and resilient land power necessary to defeat threat standoff approaches and achieve joint force objectives. Multi-domain operations are the combined arms employment of all joint and Army capabilities to create and exploit relative advantages that achieve objectives, defeat enemy forces, and consolidate gains on behalf of joint force commanders. The employment of joint and Army capabilities, integrated across echelons and synchronized in a combined arms approach, is essential to defeating threats able to contest the joint force in all domains. Army forces integrate land, maritime, air, space, and cyberspace capabilities that facilitate maneuver to create physical, information, and human advantages joint force commanders exploit across the competition continuum. Commanders and staffs require the knowledge, skills, and attributes to integrate capabilities rapidly and at the necessary scale appropriate to each echelon. During competition, theater armies strengthen land power networks, set the theater, and demonstrate readiness for armed conflict through the command and control, C2, of Army forces supporting the combatant command campaign plan. During crisis, theater armies provide options to combatant commanders as they facilitate the flow and organization of land forces moving into theater. During armed conflict, theater armies enable and support Joint Force Land Component Commander, JFLC, employment of land forces. The JFLC provides C2 of land forces and allocates joint capabilities to its core and other subordinate tactical formations. Corps integrate joint and Army capabilities at the right tactical echelons and employ divisions to achieve JFLC objectives. Divisions, enabled and supported by the Corps, defeat enemy forces, control land areas, and consolidate gains for the joint force. Defeating or destroying enemy capabilities that facilitate the enemy's preferred layered standoff approaches are central to success. Ultimately, operations by Army forces both enable and are enabled by the joint force. Because uncertainty, degraded communications, and fleeting windows of opportunity characterize operational environments during combat, multi-domain operations require disciplined initiative cultivated through a mission command culture. Leaders must have a bias for action and accept that some level of uncertainty is always present. Commanders who empower leaders to make rapid decisions and to accept risk within the commander's intent enable formations at echelon to adapt rapidly while maintaining unity of effort. See ADP 6.0 for a detailed description of mission command. Section 2, Tenets and Imperatives. There are no absolute rules for warfare. However, given analysis of the current strategic environment and assessments of the best ways to employ Army forces, doctrine emphasizes tenets and imperatives for operations that improve their prospects of success without dictating how exactly to solve a tactical or operational problem. Tenets. The art of war has no traffic with rules, for the infinitely varied circumstances and conditions of combat never produce exactly the same situation twice. Mission, terrain, weather, dispositions, armament, morale, supply, and comparative strength are variables whose mutations always combine to form a new tactical pattern. Thus, in battle, each situation is unique and must be solved on its own merits. From Infantry in Battle. The tenets of operations are desirable attributes that should be built into all plans and operations, and they are directly related to how the Army's operational concept should be employed. Commanders use the tenets of operations to inform and assess courses of action throughout the operations process. The degree to which an operation exhibits the tenets provides insight into the probability for success. The tenets of operations are agility, convergence, endurance, depth. The Army provides forces capable of transitioning to combat operations, fighting for information, producing intelligence, adapting to unforeseen circumstances, and defeating enemy forces. Army forces employ capabilities from multiple domains in a combined arms approach that creates complementary and reinforcing effects through multiple domains, while preserving combat power to maintain options for the Joint Force Commander, JFC. Creating and exploiting relative advantages require Army forces to operate with endurance and in depth. Endurance enables the ability to absorb the enemy's attacks and press the fight over the time and space necessary to accomplish the mission. Depth applies combat power throughout the enemy's formations and the operational environment, securing successive operational objectives and consolidating gains for the joint force. Agility. The ability to act faster than the enemy is critical for success. Agility is the ability to move forces and adjust their dispositions and activities more rapidly than the enemy. Agility requires sound judgment and rapid decision-making, often gained through the creation and exploitation of information advantages. Agility requires leaders to anticipate needs or opportunities, and it requires trained formations able to change direction, tasks, or focus as quickly as the situation requires. Change may come in the form of a transition between phases of an operation, or the requirement to adapt to a new opportunity or hazard. Leaders seek to understand, decide, and act or react faster than the enemy to gain a relative advantage and control the terms and tempo of the battle. They ensure formations are flexible enough to adapt to changing conditions and can move more quickly than the enemy. During competition, Army forces provide senior leaders flexibility and options through their presence, access, and influence. The time available to create and exploit opportunities against adaptive threats is usually limited. Agile units rapidly recognize an opportunity and take action to exploit it. Speed of recognition, decision-making, movement, and battle drills enable agility. During armed conflict, this often requires units to change their location and disposition rapidly. Units must be able to employ capabilities and then rapidly task-organize them again for movement or new tasks while remaining dispersed for survivability. C2 and sustainment nodes must maintain a level of functionality on the move and be able to rapidly emplace and displace in order to reduce the probability of enemy detection. Nodes that are critical to success and susceptible to enemy detection and destruction are most vulnerable, and they must be the most agile. Below the threshold of armed conflict, security force assistance teams and forward stationed and rotational forces provide agility to the combatant commander because they are able to perform a wide variety of missions and create options for the combatant command. These forces expand situational awareness through their presence and access to key land areas and populations. Their influence assures allies and partners, and they improve interoperability and agility of the multinational force. Agility helps leaders influence tempo. Tempo is the relative speed and rhythm of military operations over time with respect to the enemy, ADP-30. It implies the ability to understand, decide, act, assess, and adapt. During competition, commanders act quickly to control events and deny enemy forces relative advantages. By acting faster than the situation deteriorates, commanders can change the dynamics of a crisis and restore favorable conditions. During armed conflict, commanders normally seek to maintain a higher tempo than enemy forces do. A rapid tempo can overwhelm an enemy force's ability to counter friendly actions, and it can enable friendly forces to exploit a short window of opportunity. Convergence. Convergence is an outcome created by the concerted employment of capabilities from multiple domains and echelons against combinations of decisive points in any domain to create effects against a system, formation, decision maker, or in a specific geographic area. Its utility derives from understanding the interdependent relationships among capabilities from different domains and combining those capabilities in surprising, effective tactics that accrue advantages over time. When combined, the complementary and reinforcing nature of each friendly capability presents multiple dilemmas for enemy forces and produces an overall effect that is greater than the sum of each individual effect. The greater degree to which forces achieve convergence and sustain it over time, the more favorable the outcome. Convergence creates exploitable opportunities that enable freedom of action and mission accomplishment. Convergence occurs when a higher echelon and its subordinate echelons create effects from and in multiple domains in ways that defeat or disrupt enemy forces long enough for friendly forces to effectively exploit the opportunity. Convergence broadens the scope of mass, synchronization, and combined arms by applying combat power to combinations of decisive points instead of just one across time, space, and domains. Convergence is a way to balance the principles of mass, objective, and economy of force, massing combat power on some parts of the enemy force while employing different techniques against other decisive points to create cumulative effects the enemy cannot overcome. Convergence requires the synchronization of specific targets and broad objectives by the senior tactical echelon below the land component command. The degree to which a formation achieves convergence in an operation depends on how well leaders are able to develop an understanding of the enemy system, its capabilities, requirements, decision processes, and vulnerabilities through effective surveillance that provides mixed, redundant, and overlapping coverage. Determine the desired overall effect or opportunity and the individual effects and objectives that precipitate the opportunity. Integrate army and joint capabilities at the echelons where they are most effective. Consider all domains and redundant methods of attack to increase the probability of success. Synchronize the employment of each capability and echelon to generate simultaneous, sequential, and enduring effects against the enemy system. Assess the individual effects and the probability that the desired overall effect has been achieved. Commanders prepare to re-attack or adapt a course of action if the desired effect is not achieved or if other opportunities emerge. Assume risk and rapidly exploit the opportunities convergence provides. Integration. Convergence requires the integration of the capabilities at the echelons where their employment is most effective. Integration is the arrangement of military forces and their actions to create a force that operates by engaging as a whole, JP 1 Volume 1. Commanders generally integrate army capabilities through task organization and support relationships. Commanders allocate the employment of joint capabilities to subordinate echelons. Integrating these capabilities requires an understanding of joint processes. The degree to which commanders effectively integrate joint and army capabilities at all echelons directly influences success during operations. Military forces comprise a wide variety of components that leaders must arrange into a coherent and effective whole. Army leaders integrate joint capabilities, multinational, interagency, and interorganizational capabilities, echelons and staffs, different types of units to achieve a combined arms approach. Almost every leader activity in some way orients on integrating parts of the force to achieve unity of purpose and unity of effort. There are many intellectual tools leaders use to facilitate integration: Common ones include the Joint and Army Targeting Processes, which includes working groups, boards, and other activities to help integrate joint intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, ISR, and fires. Mission analysis to integrate the activities of multiple staff proponents. The nesting concept advocated for in the mission command approach to C2 that helps lower echelons integrate their purpose with higher echelons. Reception, staging, onward movement and integration, RSOI, for new forces entering an operation. Engagement area development to integrate all weapon systems into a defense. Synchronization. Once leaders have integrated the right capabilities, they must synchronize their employment and effects. Synchronization is the arrangement of military actions in time, space, and purpose to produce maximum relative combat power at a decisive place and time, JP2O. Understanding the following factors enables leaders to determine when to initiate employment of a capability and how to adapt to changes in the operational environment during execution. The desired overall effect over time. How the individual effects complement each other over time. The time it takes each capability or formation to generate its individual effects from the start of employment. Whether each individual effect is enduring, simultaneous, or sequenced with the other effects. The consequences of an individual effect not occurring at the planned time. Individual effects can be enduring, simultaneous, or sequential. Enduring effects provide a continuous impact on the threat until they are no longer necessary. Enduring effects can have a debilitating effect on enemy forces, but they may require significant resources to sustain. Simultaneity is the execution of related and mutually supporting tasks at the same time across multiple locations and domains, ADP3O. Simultaneous effects, the result of attacking enemy forces in multiple domains at the same time and across the depth of the enemy's echelons, can have a paralyzing effect on enemy decision-making and the effectiveness of the enemy's most critical systems for a limited period of time. They can degrade enemy reactions and facilitate the path to eventual culmination and defeat. Sequencing effects against a threat can create successive dilemmas and opportunities for deception when enemy forces begin to expect a pattern. Leaders synchronize actions and effects through C2 and the operations process. The mission, commander's intent, and concept of operations form the basis for detailed synchronization. Commanders determine the degree of control necessary to synchronize operations. They balance synchronization with agility and initiative, but they never surrender the initiative for the sake of synchronization. Excessive synchronization can lead to too much control, which limits the initiative of subordinates and undermines mission command. Achieving convergence. Achieving convergence requires detailed, centralized planning and mission orders that enable decentralized execution. Redundant and resilient communications enable synchronized action. However, leaders must anticipate degraded communications and be prepared to rely on mission orders, accept risk, and make decisions to accomplish the mission. During execution, leaders seek to maintain the conditions of convergence through rapid transitions, adjusting priorities, shifting the main effort, or adapting to maintain momentum. Longer periods of convergence allow for greater opportunities to expand advantages and achieve objectives. Leaders must understand the various processes for requesting joint capabilities and integrating them with ground maneuver. Air, space, and cyberspace tasking cycles operate on different time horizons and have different requirements for requesting effects. These cycles may vary depending on the theater and the situation. Whenever possible, leaders anticipate requirements for these effects during planning and provide ample time for the joint force to generate them. Leaders may request effects on shorter timelines, but they should not make them essential to mission success. During competition, the theater army establishes conditions for convergence that enable deterrence, provide options during crisis, and enable success at the outset of armed conflict. Intelligence, sustainment, positioning of forces, and other activities to set the theater facilitate situational understanding, decision-making, integration, and synchronization during armed conflict. The theater army requests cyberspace and space effects through the combatant command to ensure there is enough time to integrate and synchronize these capabilities. The theater army balances the use of these capabilities during competition with the need to preserve them for use by army formations during crisis or armed conflict. When armed conflict occurs in a theater, the theater army continues to facilitate convergence by providing capabilities to the land component command and shaping the operational environment outside the joint operational area. During armed conflict, the land component command apportions joint capabilities to subordinate echelons. Corps integrate joint capabilities with ground maneuver at the appropriate echelon where forces employ them to achieve convergence and achieve objectives. The advantages provided by maritime, air, space, and cyberspace capabilities will not be available all the time, so tactical echelons must be ready to exploit their effects when generated. See FM3-14 for more information on space effects. See FM3-12 for more information on cyberspace effects. Convergence is most effective when its effects accrue and create a cycle of expanding opportunity. Employing multiple and redundant methods of attack increases the probability of success by avoiding dependence on a single method of detecting, tracking, and attacking. Success causes enemy forces to react and activate more of their capabilities, creating another opportunity in one or more domains. The Corps and its subordinate echelons align their operations on land with the opportunities created by the effects generated by the other components of the joint force, preserving combat power to maximize their ability to exploit the opportunities convergence presents. Endurance. Endurance is the ability to persevere over time throughout the depth of an operational environment. Endurance enhances the ability to project combat power and extends operational reach. Endurance is about resilience and preserving combat power while continuing operations for as long as is necessary to achieve the desired outcome. During competition, Army forces improve endurance by setting the theater across all warfighting functions and improving interoperability with allies and other unified action partners. Leaders account for the requirement to preserve combat power while sustaining people, systems, and formations over the time and distance necessary throughout the depth of an area of operations. Endurance reflects the ability to employ combat power anywhere for protracted periods in all conditions, including environments with degraded communications, chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear seaburn contamination, and high casualties. Endurance stems from the ability to organize, protect, and sustain a force regardless of the distance from its support area and the austerity of the environment. Endurance involves anticipating requirements and making the most effective and efficient use of resources. As forces fight through successive engagements, maintaining mutual support among units helps prevent them becoming isolated, being defeated in detail, and culminating early. Protection prevents or mitigates enemy effects and preserves combat power, postponing culmination and prolonging effective operations. One way Army forces preserve combat power is by maintaining dispersion to the greatest degree possible. Leaders can mask combat power from dispersed positions and generate the desired effects without concentrating forces any more than is necessary. During operations, commanders and staffs integrate, synchronize, and simultaneously apply protection capabilities. Leadership and tactics contribute to endurance. Plans that allow for different units to be the main effort using follow and support or follow and assume techniques prevent early culmination in the units first committed to close combat. Realistically determining what tempo friendly forces can maintain given enemy resistance, weather, and physical distances, and the impact they have on soldiers, leaders, and equipment increases endurance over time. Schemes of maneuver that avoid enemy strengths and preserve combat power are less likely to negatively affect morale. Sustainment operations are essential to endurance. Using all methods for continuously delivering sustainment through land, maritime, and air capabilities improves endurance. When possible, sustainment units employ a space and cyberspace-enabled communications network to transmit sustainment requirements and coordinate the delivery of materiel or services. However, leaders must anticipate degraded communications and combine analog systems for communication with predictive analysis and disciplined initiative to ensure commanders can maintain acceptable tempo for as long as necessary. Depth. Depth is the extension of operations in time, space, or purpose to achieve definitive results, ADP 3.0. While the focus of endurance is on friendly combat power, the focus of depth is on enemy locations and dispositions across all domains. Commanders achieve depth by understanding the strengths and vulnerabilities of the enemy's echeloned capabilities, then attacking them throughout their dispositions in simultaneous and sequential fashion. Although simultaneous attacks through all domains in depth are not possible in every situation, leaders seek to expand their advantages and limit enemy opportunities for sanctuary and regeneration. Leaders describe the depth they can achieve in terms of operational reach. Operational reach is the distance and duration across which a force can successfully employ military capabilities, JP3.0. Staffs assess operational reach based on available sustainment, the range of capabilities and formations, and courses of action compared with the intelligence estimates of enemy capabilities and courses of action. This analysis helps the commander understand the limits on friendly operations, the risks inherent in the mission, and likely points in time and space for transitions. Below the threshold of armed conflict, the theater army creates depth by improving the infrastructure for force projection and by improving interoperability with multinational forces to the degree required by operation plans, O plans, and contingency operations. It also adds depth to its operations by expanding influence with allies and partners, populations, and other relevant actors through joint exercises, sustained forward positioning of advisor teams, and forward basing of combat formations. During armed conflict, the JFLC creates depth by facilitating access to Army and other joint capabilities, especially space and cyberspace capabilities, that improve the protection of tactical formations and degrade enemy integrated air defense systems. The JFLC also requests that the JFC influence the extended deep area in support of land operations. The Corps directs fires into its deep area to defeat enemy long-range fires, disrupt enemy sustainment and C2, separate maneuver echelons, and shape the success of future close operations. Special operations forces operating in the extended deep area can detect targets and enable the employment of joint fires to support conventional operations. Leaders enhance the depth of their operations by orchestrating effects in one dimension to amplify effects in the others. For example, a commander might decide to destroy an elite enemy formation first because it undermines the confidence of the enemy's other units. Commanders exploit this through information activities to reduce the will of other enemy forces to fight. Imperatives. Imperatives are actions army forces must take to defeat enemy forces and achieve objectives at acceptable cost. They are informed by the operational environment and the characteristics of the most capable threats army forces can encounter. Imperatives include: see yourself, see the enemy, and understand the operational environment. Account for being under constant observation and all forms of enemy contact. Create and exploit relative physical, information, and human advantages in pursuit of decision dominance. Make initial contact with the smallest element possible. Impose multiple dilemmas on the enemy. Anticipate, plan, and execute transitions. Designate, wait, and sustain the main effort. Consolidate gains continuously. Understand and manage the effects of operations on units and soldiers. See yourself, see the enemy, and understand the operational environment. Commanders visualize operational environments in terms of the factors that are relevant to decision-making. Operational environments are dynamic and contain vast amounts of information that can overload C2 systems and impede decision-making. Commanders simplify information collection, analysis, and decision-making by focusing on how they see themselves, see the enemy, and understand the operational environment. These three categories of factors are interrelated, and leaders must understand how each one relates to the others in the current context. As part of the operations process, Army leaders use different methodologies to understand and weigh options. These methodologies include the Army Design Methodology, the Military Decision-Making Process, and the Rapid Decision-Making and Synchronization Process. Each methodology provides a process that allows commanders and staffs to see themselves, see the enemy, and understand the operational environment. See ADP 50 and FM 50 for more information on Army planning methodologies. See yourself. Commanders develop an understanding of their forces relative to mission requirements, enemy capabilities, and impacts from the operational environment. This understanding helps to inform current and potential future advantages relative to enemy forces, allowing staffs to develop and adapt courses of action that exploit advantages and mitigate disadvantages. Commanders and staffs maintain this understanding of their forces through running estimates, subordinate commander updates, and friendly forces information requirements, known as FFIRs. A friendly force information requirement is information the commander and staff need to understand the status of friendly force and supporting capabilities, JP30. Friendly force information requirements identify the information the commander considers most important to make critical decisions during the execution of operations. The operations officer manages friendly force information requirements for the commander. Leaders attempt to see themselves from the enemy perspective, in part by understanding essential elements of friendly information. An essential element of friendly information is a critical aspect of a friendly operation that, if known by a threat, would subsequently compromise, lead to failure, or limit success of the operation, and therefore should be protected from enemy detection, ADP 60. Leaders see their formation in relation to their mission and in the broader context of the higher command, adjacent unit, and all domains. Part of seeing yourself is understanding how land-based operations enable operations in the other domains, and how capabilities from all domains can enable operations on land. See the enemy. Commanders see the enemy in terms of its combat power, advantages, and intentions within the operational environment and broader strategic context. Commanders develop their understanding of enemy forces from their individual knowledge, experience, and judgment honed through self-study, training, and education. From this base of knowledge, commanders and staffs build shared understanding of enemy forces and environment through intelligence preparation of the battlefield. Intelligence preparation of the battlefield is the systematic process of analyzing the mission variables of enemy, terrain, weather, and civil considerations in an area of interest to determine their effect on operations, ATP 2-01.3. Intelligence preparation of the battlefield provides commanders with awareness of information gaps about enemy forces and the operational environment. Staffs translate these gaps into information requirements and assist the commander in determining priority intelligence requirements. A priority intelligence requirement is the intelligence component of commander's critical information requirements used to focus the employment of limited intelligence assets and resources against competing demands for intelligence support, JP20. More importantly, priority intelligence requirements, known as PIRs, identify information about the threat and operational environment that a commander considers most important to making decisions in a specific context. Intelligence about civil considerations may be as critical as intelligence about enemy forces in some cases. The intelligence officer, in coordination with the rest of the staff, manages priority intelligence requirements for the commander. Enemy forces attempt to hide from, deceive, disrupt, and deny friendly collection efforts to prevent friendly forces from perceiving the enemy's true intentions. This requires commanders plan to develop the situation through action and fight for information. Information collection operations may require the commander to assume significant risk to determine enemy dispositions and anticipate enemy intentions. Leaders do not limit their understanding of the enemy to those forces in their assigned area. Enemy forces are capable of employing capabilities from great distances and multiple domains. Leaders must be aware of those capabilities so they can take appropriate action. Understand the operational environment. Leaders view the operational environment in terms of domains, dimensions, operational variables, and mission variables that are relevant to their decisions. The most difficult aspect of an operational environment to understand is how the different factors interact to affect operations. Understanding is, in the context of decision-making, knowledge that has been synthesized and had judgment applied to comprehend the situation's interrelationships, enable decision-making, and drive action, ADP 6.0. Understanding is judgment applied to knowledge in the context of a particular situation. Understanding is knowing enough about a situation to make an informed decision. Judgment is based on experience, expertise, and intuition, and it informs what decision to make. Situational understanding. Successful operations demand timely and effective decisions based on the information available. As such, commanders and staffs seek to build and maintain situational understanding throughout an operation. Situational understanding is the product of applying analysis and judgment to relevant information to determine the relationships among the operational and mission variables, ADP 6.0. Situational understanding allows commanders to make effective decisions and enables commanders and staffs to assess operations accurately. Commanders and staffs continually strive to maintain their situational understanding and work through periods of uncertainty, accepting that they cannot eliminate them. They train their staffs and subordinates to function in uncertain environments. Shared understanding. A critical challenge for commanders, staffs, and unified action partners is creating common understanding of an operational environment, an operations purpose, its challenges, and the approaches to solving those problems. Shared understanding of the situation, which requires effective flow of information between echelons, forms the basis for unity of effort and subordinate initiative. Effective decentralized execution depends on shared understanding. Shared understanding starts with Army doctrine and leader development that instill a common approach to the conduct of operations, a common professional language, and a common understanding of the principles of mission command. It is this shared understanding that allows even hastily task-organized units to operate effectively. Commanders and staffs actively create shared understanding throughout the operations process of planning, preparation, execution, and assessment. They collaboratively frame an operational environment and its problems, and then they visualize approaches to solving those problems. See ADP 6.0 for a more detailed description of shared understanding. Common operational picture. A common operational picture, COP, is key to achieving and maintaining shared situational understanding in all domains and making effective decisions faster than the threat. The common operational picture is a display of relevant information within a commander's area of interest, tailored to the user's requirements and based on common data and information shared by more than one command, ADP 6.0. Although the COP is ideally a single display, it may include more than one display and information in other forms, such as graphic representations or written reports. The COP facilitates collaborative planning and helps commanders at all echelons achieve shared situational understanding. The COP must account for relevant factors in domains affecting the operation, and it provides and enables a common understanding of the interrelationships between actions and effects through the physical, information, and human dimensions. Shared situational understanding allows commanders to visualize the effects of their decisions on other elements of the force and the overall operation. Command posts draw on a common set of shared and relevant information to create a digital cop. Units always maintain an analog cop in the event that the digital cop is compromised. During large-scale combat operations, communications are likely to be degraded or denied during the course of operations. Army forces maintain shared situational understanding by updating physical maps and graphics and using rehearsed and reliable primary, alternate, contingency, and emergency, known as PACE, communication plans. Command posts are typically responsible for maintaining the digital and analog COP. Units develop standard operating procedures, known as SOPs, reporting timelines, and battle rhythm events to ensure the COP is accurate, relevant, and current. The difficulty of maintaining a COP in a multinational environment varies based on training level, language differences, level of data sharing, technical compatibility of systems, restrictions based on classification, and other national caveats. Unified action partners may not have the technical capability or compatible systems to create and share a digital COP. Commanders must recognize and plan for this possibility by using alternate methods such as liaison officers, messengers, and voice communication. Account for being under constant observation and all forms of enemy contact. That which can be detected can be targeted for attack and killed. Air, space, and cyberspace capabilities increase the likelihood that threat forces can gain and maintain continuous visual and electromagnetic contact with Army forces. Enemy forces possess a wide range of space, air, maritime, and land-based ISR capabilities that can detect United States forces. Leaders must assume they are under constant observation from one or more domains and continuously ensure they are not providing lucrative targets for the enemy to attack. Leaders consider 9 forms of contact in multiple domains. They are direct, interactions from line-of-sight weapon systems, including small arms, heavy machine guns, and anti-tank missiles. Indirect, interactions from non-line-of-sight weapon systems, including cannon artillery, mortars, and rockets. Non-hostile, neutral interactions that may degrade or compromise military operations, including civilians on the battlefield. Obstacle, interactions from friendly, enemy, and natural obstacles, including minefields and rivers. Seaburn, interactions from friendly, enemy, and civilian seaburn effects, including chemical attacks, nuclear attacks, industrial accidents, and toxic or hazardous industrial materials. Aerial, interactions from air-based combat platforms, including attack helicopters, armed unmanned aircraft systems, air interdiction, and close air support. Visual, interactions from acquisition via the human eye, optical, or electro-optical systems, including ground reconnaissance, telescopic, thermal, and infrared sights on weapons and sensor platforms, such as unmanned aircraft systems and satellites. Electromagnetic, interactions via systems used to acquire, degrade, or destroy using select portions of the electromagnetic spectrum, including radar, jamming, cyberspace, space, and electromagnetic systems. Influence, interactions through the information dimension intended to shape the perceptions, behaviors, and decision-making of people relative to a policy or military objective, including through social media, telecommunications, human interaction, and other forms of communication. In all contexts, direct, indirect, non-hostile, seaburn, and aerial contacts are sporadic. However, Army forces are typically in continuous visual, electromagnetic, and influence contact with adversaries. Army forces are under persistent visual surveillance by space and other capabilities. Army forces and individuals are in constant electromagnetic contact with adversaries who persistently probe and disrupt individual, group, and Army capabilities dependent on space and cyberspace. Army forces are subject to adversary influence through disinformation campaigns targeting soldiers and their family and friends through social media and other platforms. During competition, adversary forces employ multiple methods of collecting on friendly forces to develop an understanding of United States capabilities, readiness status, and intentions. They do this in and outside the continental United States. They co-opt civilians and employ space-based surveillance platforms to observe unit training and deployment activities. They also penetrate networks and gain access to individual and group cyberspace personas to create options for future intimidation, coercion, and attack. Soldiers and their families should use telecommunications, the internet, and social media in ways that do not make them or their units vulnerable to adversary surveillance. During armed conflict, enemy networked land, maritime, air, and space-based capabilities enable threats to detect and rapidly target friendly forces with fires. Forces that are concentrated and static are easy for enemy forces to detect and destroy. Dispersing forces has multiple survivability benefits. It increases opportunities to use cover and concealment to reduce probability of detection. In the event the enemy detects elements of the friendly force, dispersion acts as a form of deception, helping to conceal the intentions of the friendly force. Leaders only concentrate forces when necessary and balance the survivability benefits of dispersion with the negative impacts dispersion has on mission effectiveness. In addition to dispersion, leaders integrate and synchronize deception, operation security, and other actions to thwart enemy detection efforts. See JP3-13.3 and ATP3-13.3 for detailed information on operation security. See FM3-13.4 for more information on deception. Command posts are extremely vulnerable to detection from air and space, as well as in the electromagnetic spectrum. Army forces must ensure their command posts are difficult to detect, dispersed to prevent a single strike from destroying more than one node, and rapidly displaceable. Once a command post is detected, it has only a few minutes to displace far enough to avoid enemy indirect fire effects. Leaders should focus command posts on the minimum functions necessary to retain their mobility and do everything possible to avoid detection. When the risk of enemy fires is high, commanders consider making their operations more decentralized, dispersing command post nodes into smaller component nodes and greater dispersion of electromagnetic signatures. Use of existing hardened structures and restrictive terrain to conceal headquarters equipment and vehicles, instead of tents organized in standard configurations, are options commanders have to improve command post survivability. Account for constant enemy observation. Enemy forces possess a wide range of space, air, maritime, and land-based reconnaissance and surveillance capabilities that can detect United States forces. To counter these robust and persistent capabilities requires counterintelligence efforts and the disciplined application of operation security. Enemy forces employ UASs in large numbers and with a diverse array of capabilities. Leaders account for enemy capabilities and likely reconnaissance objectives as they develop their counter-UAS plan. Leaders implement techniques and procedures for countering enemy UASs based on their organic capabilities, attached capabilities, and the mission variables. Leaders combine multiple measures, including deception, to make it more difficult for enemy forces to detect friendly forces. These measures include counter-reconnaissance, including counter-UAS operations, cover and concealment, both natural and man-made, false battle positions and deception obstacles, obscuration, dispersion, noise and light discipline, limited visibility operations, particularly for sustainment functions and large unit movements, electromagnetic emission control and masking to include social media and personal communication discipline. Because Army forces employ an increasing number of capabilities that emit electromagnetic radiation that enemies can target, leaders must apply emission control measures, balancing the risks to the force with the risks to the mission. As risk to the force increases, leaders increase their emission control measures. There may be times that the risk of friendly emissions being detected and targeted is assessed as too high, causing Army forces to use methods of communications with no electromagnetic signature. Understanding threat systems, their capabilities, and their disposition supports effective planning and the execution of emission control measures, including minimizing length and frequency of radio transmissions, dispersing formations and command posts, using lowest effective power settings, establishing and enforcing the primary, alternate, contingency, and emergency communication plan, using remote antennas, using brevity codes, ProWord execution matrices, and communications windows, using secure landlines, using directional antennas, using data burst transmissions, using proper encryption and equipment configuration, moving command posts and formations, masking emissions using terrain and man-made structures, recognizing and reporting jamming of global positioning system, radar, and satellite communications, employing deceptive emitters, implementing dispersion. Leader efforts to preempt and mitigate enemy detection are essential, but they cannot eliminate the risk of enemy massed and precision fires, including seaburn and weapons of mass destruction. To improve survivability from enemy indirect fires, Army forces maintain dispersion and remain as mobile as possible to avoid presenting themselves as lucrative targets to the enemy's most capable systems. When mission demands require units to remain static for more than short periods of time, those units must dig in to increase survivability. See ATP 3-37.34 for information on survivability positions. Commanders have options for achieving dispersion. At the operational level, commanders maintain dispersion by employing multiple staging areas and multiple lines of communications. At the tactical level, commanders maintain dispersion by increasing the distance between subordinate formations and among the elements in those formations. In the attack, they use multiple routes and longer march intervals between formations to the objective and only concentrate forces enough to mass effects or generate favorable force ratios during close combat. In the defense, forces occupy areas away from prepared defensive positions until contact is imminent to prevent their detection and destruction by enemy deep fires. Defending forces also maximize dispersion by using terrain and employing the maximum supporting ranges and distances within acceptable risk criteria. When concentrating forces is unavoidable or necessary, units remain concentrated at the lowest level and for the shortest time possible and then rapidly disperse. When the desired level of dispersion is not achievable, commanders place greater emphasis on imposing multiple simultaneous dilemmas on enemy forces as they move within range of enemy weapon systems. This can reduce the risk of enemy forces efficiently massing their effects. Commanders also use speed and violence of action when dispersion is not possible to minimize exposure in high-risk areas. Vignette: Second Nagorno-Karabakh War, September through November 2020. During the six-week war, Azerbaijan exploited its technological advantage with lethal efficiency against Armenian forces. Azerbaijan used its UASs in conjunction with Israeli loiter munitions and modified old Soviet AN-2 planes to defeat Armenia's older air defense systems. Azerbaijani forces flew the remotely piloted AN-2s to trigger engagements from Armenia's air defense systems, while Azerbaijan's UASs and loiter munitions remained at higher altitudes undetected or out of range. When the air defense systems engaged targets, Azerbaijan pinpointed the air defense system's locations and destroyed those systems with UASs, loiter munitions, or indirect fires. Azerbaijan's tactics caused Armenia's air defense network to collapse, and Azerbaijan gained local air superiority over the battlefield. With air superiority, Azerbaijan placed Armenian forces under continuous surveillance with its UASs. In addition, Azerbaijani forces had infiltrated special operations forces to conduct surveillance of Armenian positions. Armenian forces were unable to remain hidden, and Azerbaijan began destroying Armenian tanks, artillery, and vehicles at a significant rate. Although battle damage assessments vary, multiple sources reported that Azerbaijan destroyed hundreds of Armenian tanks, armored fighting vehicles, artillery systems, multiple launch rocket systems, and air defense systems. The inability to hide and fear of destruction had a demoralizing effect on Armenian soldiers. Create and exploit relative physical, information, and human advantages in pursuit of decision dominance. The employment of lethal force is based on the premise that destruction and other physical consequences compels enemy forces to change their decision-making and behavior, ultimately accepting defeat. The type, amount, and ways in which lethal force compels enemy forces varies, and this depends heavily on enemy forces, their capabilities, goals, and the will of relevant populations. Understanding the relationship between physical, information, and human factors enables leaders to take advantage of every opportunity and limit the negative effects of undesirable and unintended consequences. Actions taken focused on one dimension can create advantages in the other dimensions. The physical dimension dominates tactical actions and the employment of destructive force to compel an outcome. Physical actions, particularly the employment of violence, usually generate cognitive effects in the human dimension. Information dimension factors inform and reflect the interaction between human and physical factors. The information dimension deals with how relevant actors and populations communicate what is happening in the physical and human dimensions. The human dimension is where perceptions, decision-making, and behavior is determined, and is therefore the dimension that ultimately determines human will. Commanders combine, reinforce, and exploit advantages through all the dimensions, expanding them as they accrue over time. Refer to Chapter 1 for more information about physical, information, and human advantages. During competition and crisis, Army forces set conditions for armed conflict and physically exhibit combat readiness through training and exercises, which is communicated by various means to create a deterrent effect in the human dimension. During armed conflict, tactical leaders typically focus on generating physical advantages and the immediate physical and cognitive effects they produce. However, leaders maintain awareness of the overall purpose of physical effects, ensuring they commit combat power to necessary objectives that produce advantageous results in all dimensions. At the strategic level, leaders focus more heavily on the information and human impacts of physical effects and how to convert them into desirable policy outcomes. Successful military operations often depend on a commander's ability to gain and maintain the operational initiative by achieving decision dominance, a desired state in which a force generates decisions, counters threat information warfare capabilities, strengthens friendly morale and will, and affects threat decision-making more effectively than the opponent. Decision dominance requires developing a variety of information advantages relative to that of the threat, and then exploiting those advantages to achieve objectives. Commanders employ relevant military capabilities from all warfighting functions to create and exploit decision dominance. Decision dominance is aspirational, situationally dependent, and always relative to an opponent. The goal is to understand, decide, and act faster and more effectively than the threat. It is not absolute speed that matters, but speed relative to the threat. Commanders can achieve this by interfering with an enemy force's C2 while enhancing, protecting, and sustaining their own C2. An advantage need not be large. A small advantage exploited repeatedly can contribute decisively to the success of Army forces. The ability and desire to generate a higher tempo does not mean commanders should act when the situation calls for waiting. The aim is meaningful, not merely rapid action. A decision to act is meaningful only if the resulting actions by friendly forces create an advantage relative to the threat. Adversaries and enemies pursue their own relative advantages, typically in asymmetric ways, while continually attempting to achieve decision dominance over friendly forces. Because threat forces adapt and situations evolve, decision dominance is relative and transitory. Commanders therefore continuously make assessments to determine which forms of relative advantage are most important to pursue over time. Make initial contact with the smallest element possible. Army forces are extremely vulnerable when they do not sufficiently understand the disposition of enemy forces and become decisively engaged on terms favorable to enemy forces. To avoid being surprised and incurring heavy losses, leaders must set conditions for making enemy contact on terms favorable to the friendly force. They anticipate when and where to make enemy contact, the probability and impact of making enemy contact, and actions to take on contact. Quickly applying multiple capabilities against enemy forces while preventing the bulk of the friendly force from being engaged itself requires an understanding of the forms of contact. During armed conflict at the tactical level, commanders seek to gain and maintain contact with the enemy using the smallest element possible, enabling rapid development of situational understanding and using maneuver and fires to attack enemy forces in the most advantageous way. Units seek to make contact using sensors or unmanned systems first to minimize risk to soldiers and key capabilities. Judicious employment of all available reconnaissance and security capabilities is the most effective way to make direct contact with the smallest possible friendly force. Friendly forces should attempt to make contact with sensors and unmanned systems first, incorporating them into their movement techniques. Employment of UAS and other platforms activates enemy systems and enables their detection without creating risks to manned friendly reconnaissance and maneuver forces. After detecting an enemy capability, Army forces cue intelligence platforms from other domains to improve their understanding of enemy force dispositions and engage those forces on advantageous terms. Identifying enemy locations may not provide enough information for Army forces to discern enemy intentions. Commanders develop the situation through action when they deliberately place forces in contact. Small maneuver forces are often the most effective way to compel enemy forces to react and show their intentions. Leaders exercise tactical patience and set conditions for success. They synchronize maneuver with complementary and reinforcing capabilities through the depth of an operational environment to generate situational awareness and detect opportunities to exploit. By combining friendly speed with multiple dilemmas, it is possible to rapidly disintegrate the coherence of an enemy formation before it can effectively respond. Using capabilities from multiple domains, such as air and ground, commanders cause threat systems to activate or emit electromagnetic signals that reveal their capabilities and the locations of their critical nodes, such as sensors, shooters, and command posts. During competition, commanders and staffs use this information to improve understanding, update target lists, and refine plans for attacking threat vulnerabilities. By doing this, commanders and staffs set conditions for success during armed conflict. There are situations in which it is not advisable to make contact with the smallest possible element. When commanders are confident they have superior forces, have the element of surprise, and know the enemy's disposition and course of action, they make contact with as much combat power as possible to maximize surprise and shock effect against enemy forces. Impose multiple dilemmas on the enemy. Imposing multiple dilemmas on enemy forces complicates their decision-making and forces them to prioritize among competing options. It is a way of seizing the initiative and making enemy forces react to friendly operations. Simultaneous operations encompassing multiple domains, conducted in depth and supported by deception, present enemy forces with multiple dilemmas. Employing capabilities from multiple domains degrades enemy freedom of action, reduces enemy flexibility and endurance, and disrupts enemy plans and coordination. The application of capabilities in complementary and reinforcing ways creates more problems than an enemy commander can solve, which erodes both enemy effectiveness and the will to fight. Deception contributes to creating multiple dilemmas, achieving operational surprise, and maintaining the initiative. Deception efforts by tactical formations seek to delay enemy decision-making until it is too late to matter or to cause an enemy commander to make the wrong decision. Deception requires an understanding of how to surprise enemy forces. Time to plan, prepare, execute, and assess a deception operation, and the ability to properly resource the deception effort. Deception inhibits effective enemy action by increasing the time, space, and resources necessary to understand friendly courses of action.
Well-executed deception begins a cumulative effect on enemy decision-making cycles, and it can cause inaction, delay, misallocation of forces, and surprise as enemy forces react to multiple real and false dilemmas. Attempts to mislead enemy forces are fundamental to all courses of action development wherever possible. While commanders and staffs integrate deception as part of course of action development, they take operation security measures to obscure friendly intentions, make enemy forces account for multiple friendly courses of action for as long as possible, and ensure that enemy forces do not become aware of the deception effort. See JP3-13.4 and FM3-13.4 for more information on military deception. Forcible entry operations and envelopments into locations offset from how enemy defenses are oriented can create multiple dilemmas by dislocating enemy forces' prepared operational approach or exceeding their capability to respond. The capability to project power across operational distances presents enemy forces with difficult decisions about how to array their forces in time and space. Rapid tactical maneuver to exploit a penetration or envelopment defeats enemy attempts to reposition integrated fires networks or integrated air defense systems, which in turn are typically less effective when moving. Creating multiple dilemmas requires recognizing exploitable opportunities. Understanding enemy dispositions, systems, and vulnerabilities, and the characteristics of the terrain and population informs situational understanding and course of action development. Employing mutually supporting forces along different axes to strike from unexpected directions creates dilemmas, particularly when army and joint forces simultaneously create effects against enemy forces in multiple domains. Commanders seek every opportunity to make enemy forces operate in different directions at the time and locations of their choosing. Commanders are not limited to destructive means for imposing multiple dilemmas on the enemy. For example, they can employ psychological operations and civil affairs capabilities to influence and garner the support of civilian populations. This creates a dilemma for enemy forces who must react and divert resources to counter passive or active resistance. Anticipate, plan, and execute transitions. Transitions mark a change of focus in an operation. Leaders plan transitions as part of the initial plan or parts of a branch or sequel. They can be unplanned and cause the force to react to unforeseen circumstances. Transitions can be part of progress towards mission accomplishment, or they can reflect a temporary setback. Common transitions are between competition, crisis, and armed conflict, between operations dominated by offense, defense, and stability, between types of offense or defense, between phases of an operation, between branches and sequels of a campaign or major operation, between command posts during emplacement, movement, and displacement of one or more nodes, shifts of the main effort, supporting effort, and reserve between units. Task organization changes. Passing responsibility for enemy units crossing unit or echelon boundaries. Passing terrain responsibility between units. Transferring responsibility for security and governance to legitimate authorities. Change in mission from combat operations to reconstitution. Moving forces in and out of theater. Changes in the environment that cause a reframe of the mission or change in the purpose of the operation. Transitions are critical planning responsibilities for commanders. They anticipate key transitions and issue planning guidance to their staffs. Staffs, in turn, suggest to their commanders when transitions may be necessary. Staffs monitor current operations and track conditions that require transition. Transitions are typically points of friction or opportunities, and leaders assign subordinate leaders specific responsibilities wherever transitions occur. For example, during passage of lines, at wet gap crossings, at contact points, and along unit boundaries. Effective transitions require planning and preparation well before their execution, so the force can maintain the momentum and tempo of operations. Risks increase during transitions, so commanders establish clear conditions for their execution. Commanders establish decision points to support successful transitions during operations. The ability of echelons below brigade to execute battle drills mitigates some of the risks higher echelons face during transitions. A transition occurs for several reasons. An unexpected change in conditions may require commanders to direct an abrupt transition. In such cases, the overall composition of the force remains unchanged despite sudden changes in mission, task organization, and rules of engagement. Typically, task organization evolves to meet changing conditions. However, transition planning must also account for changes in mission. Commanders continuously assess the situation, retask, reorganize, and cycle their forces in and out of close combat to retain operational initiative. Commanders seek to shift priorities or the main effort without necessitating operational pauses that make friendly forces more vulnerable to enemy action. Commanders identify potential transitions during planning and account for them throughout execution. Transition planning and preparation should include forecasting when and how to transition, arranging tasks to facilitate transitions, creating a task organization that anticipates transitions, rehearsing critical transitions such as the transition from defense to offense, ensuring the force understands changes to rules of engagement during mission transitions, understanding potential unintended consequences and the risk they pose to successful transition. Commanders and staffs account for the time required to plan, prepare, execute, and assess transitions, accounting for likely friction due to the environment, degraded communications, and enemy action. Assessment ensures that commanders measure progress toward such transitions and take appropriate actions to prepare for and execute them. Designate, weight, and sustain the main effort. Commanders frequently face competing demands for limited resources. They resolve these competing demands by establishing priorities. One way in which commanders establish priorities is by designating, weighting, and sustaining the main effort. The main effort is a designated subordinate unit whose mission at a given point in time is most critical to overall mission success, ADP3O. Commanders provide the main effort with the appropriate resources and support necessary for its success. When designating a main effort, commanders consider augmenting a unit's task organization and giving it priority of resources and support. The commander designates various priorities of support, such as for air and missile defense, AMD, close air support and other fires, information collection, mobility and countermobility, and sustainment. Commanders and staffs anticipate sustainment requirements of the main effort as it shifts throughout the operation, and they position supplies and capabilities according to the situation. Commanders must balance forward positioning of sustainment assets with the need for freedom of action and operational reach when weighting the main effort. Commanders shift resources and priorities as circumstances require. While there can be only one main effort at any given time, commanders may shift the main effort several times during an operation to increase the endurance of the overall force. They should allow time for the shift of support priorities prior to designating a unit as the main effort, since shifting the main effort may require movement of resources and the positioning of supporting capabilities. Consolidate gains continuously. Leaders add depth to their operations in terms of time and purpose when they consolidate gains. Commanders consolidate gains at the operational and tactical levels as a strategically informed approach to current operations with the desired political outcome of the conflict in mind. During competition and crisis, commanders expand opportunities created from previous conflicts and activities to sustain enduring United States interests while improving the credibility, readiness, and deterrent effect of Army forces. During large-scale combat operations, commanders consolidate gains continuously or as soon as possible, deciding whether to accept risk with a more moderate tempo during the present mission or in the future as large-scale combat operations conclude. The multi-domain aspects of an operational environment place increased strain on the ability of military forces to create enduring change, particularly in the human and information dimensions. The size, scale, and scope of an assigned area of operations, AO, may reduce the duration of effects, just as they dilute the potency of combat power. The speed and pervasiveness of enemy disinformation campaigns is a constant challenge that contests Army forces' ability to change human will and behavior. The need to fix and bypass some enemy forces during operations designed to penetrate or envelop enemy echelons may leave significant enemy threats in rear areas and jeopardize gains made during offensive operations. Commanders therefore continuously assess when and how they will consolidate gains as they develop the situation. Consolidating gains at every echelon leads to better transitions out of armed conflict and into post-conflict competition. It serves as a preventative against the rise of an insurgency by those wishing to prolong the conflict. Understand and manage the effects of operations on units and soldiers. Continuous operations rapidly degrade the performance of people and the equipment they employ, particularly during combat. In battle, soldiers and units are more likely to fail catastrophically than gradually. Commanders and staffs must be alert to small indicators of fatigue, fear, indiscipline, and reduced morale, and they must take measures to deal with these before their cumulative effects drive a unit to the threshold of collapse. Staffs and commanders at higher echelons must take into account the impact of prolonged combat on subordinate units, which causes efficiency to drop even when physical losses are not great. Leaders consider the isolation soldiers experience when not being able to remain connected with family and friends via social media and other platforms for extended periods. Well-trained, physically fit soldiers in cohesive units retain the qualities of tenacity and aggressiveness longer than those who are not. Although all units experience peaks and valleys in combat effectiveness, well-trained, cohesive units under effective leaders have increased endurance and higher effectiveness than units that lack training and effective leaders. Leaders develop resilient subordinates. Staffs and commanders need to take this variance in performance into account in their planning by matching units to missions, rotating units through difficult tasks to permit recuperation, and by basing their expectations of a unit's performance on accurate awareness of its current capabilities. Historically, during conflicts where tactical units are in contact with enemy forces on a continuous basis for weeks or more at a time, commanders and staffs at echelons above brigade rotated subordinate units out of enemy contact to reorganize, rest, and train on a regular basis. Continuously assessing the combat effectiveness of subordinate formations is necessary to inform such decisions in the future. Section 3. Operational Approach and Operational Framework. The operational approach provides the logic for how tactical tasks ultimately achieve the desired end state. It provides a unifying purpose and focus to all operations. Sound operational approaches balance risk and uncertainty with friction and chance. The operational approach provides the basis for detailed planning, allows leaders to establish a logical operational framework, and helps produce an executable order. See ADP 3.0 for more information on operational art. See ADP 5.0 for more information on planning. An operational framework organizes an area of geographic and operational responsibility for the commander and provides a way to describe the employment of forces. The framework illustrates the relationship between close operations, operations in depth, and other operations in time and space across domains. As a visualization tool, the operational framework bridges the gap between a unit's conceptual understanding of the environment and its need to generate detailed orders that direct operations. Operational Approach. Through operational art, commanders develop their operational approach, a broad description of the mission, operational concepts, tasks, and actions required to accomplish the mission, JP 5.0. An operational approach is the result of the commander's visualization of what needs to be done in broad terms to solve identified problems. It is the main idea that informs detailed planning. When describing an operational approach, commanders consider ways to defeat enemy forces in detail and potential decisive points. Employ combinations of defeat mechanisms to isolate and defeat enemy forces, functions, and capabilities. Assess options for assuming risk. Defeating enemy forces in detail. Armed conflict implies the need to defeat enemy forces. Defeat is to render a force incapable of achieving its objectives, ADP 3.0. When used as a task or effect in operations, defeat provides maximum flexibility to the commander in how to accomplish the mission. Senior leaders assign defeat as a task when the situation is still developing or when the commander on the ground, by virtue of experience and proximity to the problem, is uniquely capable of deciding how to employ lethal force to accomplish objectives. As a task, defeat is appropriate for theater strategic and operational level echelons, but it is often too vague for tactical echelons below core level, where more specific outcomes or a higher level of destruction might be necessary to ensure the overall defeat of enemy forces. As a purpose or an effect, defeat is often used to describe the ultimate outcome of an operation. Defeat inevitably leads to transition. Strategic defeat occurs when an enemy's political leadership and national will acquiesce to the friendly political will, and the situation transitions to a more desirable form of competition below armed conflict. Operational defeat occurs when enemy forces no longer have the will or ability to pursue military objectives, and the friendly force has achieved most or all of its objectives. At the tactical level, an attacking force defeats an enemy defense when it causes enemy forces to transition to a retrograde and cease defending friendly objectives. A defending force defeats an enemy attack when it causes enemy forces to culminate and transition to the defense before achieving their objectives. When United States forces possess overwhelming advantages across all domains, the JFC is able to attack all elements of the enemy force with a high degree of simultaneity. Simultaneity disrupts the enemy's C2 system and rapidly disintegrates each component of the threat warfighting system at the same time. However, peer threats, by definition, possess a scale and quality of warfighting capability that is too extensive to attack at once. When fighting a peer threat, commanders identify weaknesses between enemy units or in enemy formations and warfighting systems that provide opportunities to defeat them in detail. Defeat in detail is concentrating overwhelming combat power against separate parts of a force rather than defeating the entire force at once, ADP 3-90. Traditionally, commanders of a smaller force use this technique to achieve success against a larger enemy force. However, defeat in detail also applies to operations that focus effort on a specific enemy function, capability, echelon, domain, or dimension. Defeat in detail requires leaders to evaluate enemy forces in the context of all the relevant domains and dimensions of an operational environment. Commanders must understand the various parts of an enemy force and its vulnerabilities, and then discern the best ways to project combat power against those vulnerabilities. By comparing enemy weaknesses to friendly advantages, leaders begin to see opportunities and formulate options. Sometimes enemy vulnerabilities and friendly advantages intersect at a single place and time in a way that is decisive to mission accomplishment. That single place and time is a decisive point, key terrain, key event, critical factor, or function that, when acted upon, enables commanders to gain a marked advantage over an enemy or contribute materially to achieving success, JP 5.0. Decisive points help commanders select clear, conclusive, attainable objectives that directly contribute to achieving an end state through convergence or other means. Defeat and stability mechanisms. A defeat mechanism is a method through which friendly forces accomplish their mission against enemy opposition, ADP 3.0. Army forces at all echelons commonly use combinations of four defeat mechanisms: destroy, dislocate, disintegrate, and isolate. Applying more than one defeat mechanism simultaneously creates multiple dilemmas for enemy forces and complementary and reinforcing effects not attainable with a single mechanism. Commanders may have an overarching defeat mechanism or combination of mechanisms that accomplish the mission with supporting defeat mechanisms for components of an enemy formation or warfighting system. Defeat mechanisms can guide subordinate development of tactical tasks, purposes, and effects in their operations, facilitating control and initiative. During competition, commanders take actions that set conditions for the future application of defeat mechanisms and demonstrate the capability to impose the defeat mechanisms on enemy forces. These activities include posturing forces, penetrating enemy networks, and conducting exercises with allies and partners. Commanders determine the speed and degree to which a defeat mechanism must impact an enemy force or warfighting system. Although rapid defeat is typically desirable, it may be more feasible or acceptable to take a gradual approach to completing a defeat. Rendering an enemy incapable of achieving its objectives does not usually require total annihilation. To determine the degree of impact on the enemy force, commanders consider causing only minor degradation to a threat warfighting system or unit when it is sufficient to prevent the enemy from achieving its objective. This preserves friendly combat power and applies the economy of force principle. In other cases, especially main efforts against determined peer threat forces, commanders typically require a significant portion of an enemy's force be destroyed. When commanders destroy, they apply lethal force against an enemy capability so that it can no longer perform its function. Destroy is a tactical mission task that physically renders an enemy force combat ineffective until it is reconstituted. Alternatively, to destroy a combat system is to damage it so badly that it cannot perform any function or be restored to a usable condition without being entirely rebuilt. Destruction and the threat of destruction lie at the core of all the defeat mechanisms and make them more compelling. The other mechanisms work when friendly action has caused enemy forces to face a grim reality. Their ability to fight and relative advantages are degraded, and their options are to surrender, withdraw, or be destroyed. Dislocate is to employ forces to obtain significant positional advantage in one or more domains, rendering the enemy's dispositions less valuable, perhaps even irrelevant. Typically, the impact of dislocation increases when the friendly force exploits advantages in multiple domains. Commanders often achieve dislocation through deception and by placing forces in locations where enemy forces do not expect them. Achieving dislocation requires an understanding how enemy forces are oriented and how quickly they can shift. Envelopments and turning movements enable physical dislocation. Deception can create and enhance psychological effects of dislocation. Isolate means to separate a force from its sources of support in order to reduce its effectiveness and increase its vulnerability to defeat, ADP 3.0. Isolation can encompass multiple domains and can have both physical and psychological effects detrimental to accomplishing a mission. Isolating an enemy force from the electromagnetic spectrum increases the effects of physical isolation by reducing its ability to communicate and degrading its situational awareness. The ability of an isolated unit to perform its intended mission generally degrades over time, decreasing its ability to interfere with an opposing force's course of action. When commanders isolate, they deny enemy forces access to capabilities that enable them to maneuver at will in time and space. Disintegrate means to disrupt the enemy's command and control, degrading the synchronization and cohesion of its operations. Disintegration prevents enemy unity of effort and leads to a degradation of the enemy's capabilities or will to fight. It attacks the cohesion of enemy formations and their ability to employ combined arms approaches and work effectively together. Commanders can achieve disintegration by targeting enemy functions essential to the threat's ability to act as a whole. They often achieve disintegration by specifically targeting an enemy's command structure, communication systems, the linkages between them, and the capabilities they control. Disintegration can be achieved through the employment of the other three defeat mechanisms in combination, particularly when directed toward systems like integrated fires commands and integrated air defense systems heavily dependent upon C2 and sensor nodes. Cyberspace, space, and electromagnetic warfare capabilities can help disintegrate enemy formations by degrading communications and disrupting the quality of enemy information and decisions. Separating enemy reserves and follow-on echelons from the main body with maneuver forces or fires is a physical way to isolate echelons, achieve favorable force ratios, and destroy those echelons. This in turn disintegrates the coherence of an enemy's attack or defense. Destroying enemy sustainment capability separates enemy fires and maneuver from fuel and ammunition and delays resupply operations. A stability mechanism is the primary method through which friendly forces affect civilians in order to attain conditions that support establishing a lasting, stable peace, ADP 3.0. As with defeat mechanisms, combinations of stability mechanisms produce complementary and reinforcing effects that accomplish the mission more effectively and efficiently than single mechanisms do alone. The four stability mechanisms are compel, control, influence, and support. Compel means to use or threaten to use lethal force to establish control and dominance, affect behavioral change, or enforce compliance with mandates, agreements, or civil authority. Control involves imposing civil order. Influence means to alter the opinions, attitudes, and ultimately the behavior of foreign, friendly, neutral, and threat audiences through messages, presence, and actions. Support establishes, reinforces, or sets conditions necessary for the instruments of national power to function effectively. Risk. Commanders accept risk on their own terms to create opportunities and apply judgment to manage those hazards they do not control. Risk is an inherent part of every operation and cannot be avoided. Commanders analyze risk in collaboration with subordinates to help determine what level and type of risk exists and how to mitigate it. When considering how much risk to accept with a course of action, commanders consider risk to the force against the probability of mission success during current and future operations. They assess options in terms of weighting the main effort, economy of force, and physical loss in the context of what they have been tasked to do. Leaders consider risk across all domains. Accepting risk in one domain may create opportunities in other domains. For example, the risk of seizing an airfield puts ground forces at risk, but it creates an opportunity to receive reinforcements and supplies that extend operational reach. During combat against an enemy with capabilities comparable to that of the United States, the greatest opportunity may come from the course of action with the most risk. An example of this is committing significant forces to a potentially costly frontal attack that fixes the bulk of enemy forces in place to set the conditions for their envelopment by other forces. Another is taking a difficult but unexpected route to achieve surprise. Accepting significant risk is necessary when seeking to create an advantage where none exists otherwise. The unrealistic expectation of avoiding all risk is detrimental to mission accomplishment. While each situation is different, commanders avoid undue caution or commitment of resources to guard against every perceived threat. Waiting for perfect intelligence and synchronization may increase risk or close a window of opportunity. Mission command requires that commanders and subordinates accept risk, exercise initiative, and act decisively, particularly when the outcome is uncertain. Commanders determine how to impose risk on enemy forces. Viewing the situation through the enemy's perspective, commanders seek to create multiple dilemmas and increase the number and severity of hazards with which enemy forces must contend. Leaders consider the human and information factors that govern the manner in which enemy forces assess costs and benefits and calculate risk. Commanders disrupt this risk calculation when they increase perceived costs to enemy forces and reduce the perception of potential benefits. Commanders do this by imposing dilemmas on enemy forces, not based on what a United States or Allied leader views as a problem, but on what an enemy commander views as detrimental. Some dilemmas are universally accepted as costly, but others are cultural or personal. Commanders rely on military intelligence and experience to develop this level of situational understanding. Strategic framework. The strategic framework accounts for factors in the strategic environment and the connection of strategic capabilities to operational and tactical level operations. The strategic framework includes four areas: strategic support area, joint security area, extended deep area, assigned operational area. Strategic support area. The strategic support area describes the area extending from a theater of operations to a base in the United States or another combatant commander's area of responsibility. It contains those organizations, lines of communications, and other agencies required to support deployed forces. It also includes the airports and seaports supporting the flow of forces and sustainment into a theater. Finally, a strategic support area may contain key operational capabilities, such as cyberspace assets, that are employed from outside an operational area but create effects inside it. Most friendly nuclear, space, and cyberspace capabilities and important network infrastructure are controlled and located in the strategic support area. Joint security area. A joint security area is a specific area to facilitate protection of joint bases and their connecting lines of communications that support joint operations, JP3-10. The joint security area, JSA, is inside or immediately adjacent to an operational area where significant forces and sustainment from two or more services are positioned to conduct or support operations. Joint security on land includes bases, mission essential assets, lines of communications, and convoy security. A senior Army commander is often designated with responsibility for joint security operations on land. The size of a JSA varies considerably and is highly dependent on the size of the operational area, mission essential assets, logistics support requirements, threats, or scope of the joint operation. The JSA may be included in, be separate from, or be adjacent to the rear areas of the Joint Force Land Component Commander. During large-scale combat operations, JSAs typically are separate from Land Component or Field Army rear areas and associated support areas. See JP3-10 for more information on JSAs. Extended Deep Area. The extended deep area is comprised of operational and strategic deep areas. These areas typically do not fall within the Land Component Command's AO, but they are part of its area of interest because enemy capabilities and vulnerabilities in the extended deep area can have significant impacts on the outcomes of operations. Extended deep areas are typically the purview of the Joint Force Headquarters or another combatant command. Typically, the Joint Force Air Component Command, known as the JFAC, is the supported command in extended deep areas. Army forces may be tasked to support it with long-range precision fires. Operational deep areas are generally inside the area of interest and immediately beyond the land component's initially assigned AO. These areas may or may not be within the boundaries of a joint operations area, JOA, or a theater of operations. Operational deep areas are often beyond the feasible movement of conventional forces without significant support from the joint force. Operational deep areas contain enemy supporting formations and capabilities for their main forces. Enemy forces can generate significant combat power from these areas, and the capabilities that reside there are often vital to their conduct of operations. In most campaign designs, operational objectives for friendly forces reside initially in the operational deep area. Strategic deep areas are beyond the feasible range of movement for conventional ground forces or policy prohibits their operations. These areas are where the combatant commander, other combatant commands, and national agencies can employ strategic intelligence capabilities, joint fires, special operations forces, and space and cyberspace capabilities. Many enemy space, cyberspace, and information warfare capabilities reside in strategic deep areas across international boundaries and outside the JOA, and they often comprise multiple areas of influence.
Operational framework. The operational framework is a cognitive tool used to assist commanders and staffs in clearly visualizing and describing the application of combat power in time, space, purpose, and resources in the concept of operations, ADP 1-01. Commanders build their operational framework on their assessment of the operational environment, including all domains and dimensions. They may create new models to fit the circumstances, but they generally apply a combination of common models according to doctrine. The three models commonly used to build an operational framework are assigned areas, deep, close, and rear operations, main effort, supporting effort, and reserve. Note, commanders may use any operational framework models they find useful, but they must remain synchronized with their higher echelon headquarters operational framework. Assigned areas. The JFC assigns land forces an operational area within a joint organizational construct. The land component, or R4 commander, subdivides their AO into subordinate assigned areas to best support the desired scheme of maneuver. Commanders assign areas to subordinates based on a range of factors, including the mission, friendly forces available, enemy situation, and terrain. An assigned area that is too large for a unit to effectively control or exceeds a unit's area of influence increases risk, allows sanctuaries for enemy forces, and limits joint flexibility. An assigned area that is too small constrains maneuver, limits opportunities for dispersion, and creates congested lines of communication. Most operations involve a combination of contiguous and non-contiguous assigned areas. Large areas with small forces typically conduct non-contiguous operations, which place greater demands on C2 and sustainment. Commanders retain responsibility for any area not assigned to a subordinate unit. Within their assigned area, units use control measures to assign responsibilities, prevent fratricide, facilitate C2, coordinate fires, control maneuver, and organize operations. To facilitate this integration and synchronization, commanders designate targeting priorities, effects, and timing within their assigned areas. There are three types of assigned areas that a land component or R4 commander uses. Area of operations, zone, sector. An area of operations is an operational area defined by a commander for the land or maritime force commander to accomplish their missions and protect their forces, JP30. An area of operations is defined by its boundaries. Within their AO, units integrate assigned and supporting capabilities, synchronize warfighting functions, and generate combat power against enemy forces to accomplish the mission. Responsibilities for an AO include terrain management, information collection, integration, and synchronization, civil affairs operations, movement control, clearance of fires, security, personnel recovery, airspace management, minimum essential stability operations tasks, which are establish civil security, provide immediate needs, access to food, water, shelter, and medical treatment. Commanders can add, remove, or adjust AO responsibilities based on the situation and mission variables. Note, a land AO by definition does not include a volume of airspace to control. Airspace control authorities delegate airspace control to Army commanders based on the situation. All commanders must be prepared to enable or coordinate airspace management. See JP3-52 and FM3-52 for more information on airspace control. A zone is an operational area assigned to a unit in the offense that only has rear and lateral boundaries. The non-bounded side of a zone is open towards enemy forces. A higher echelon headquarters uses fire support coordination and maneuver control measures, such as a limit of advance and a coordinated fire line, to synchronize its deep operations with those of a subordinate unit. Zones allow higher headquarters to adjust deep operations without having to change unit boundaries.
This gives greater flexibility to the higher headquarters for controlling deep operations, allowing subordinate units to focus on close and rear operations. Units treat everything behind the forward line of troops as an AO with its associated responsibilities. Units can subdivide a zone into subordinate AOs, zones, or sectors. A sector is an operational area assigned to a unit in the defense that has rear and lateral boundaries and interlocking fires. The non-bounded side of a sector is open towards the enemy. A higher echelon headquarters uses fire support coordination and maneuver control measures, such as battle positions and trigger lines, to synchronize subordinate units. Higher headquarters are responsible to synchronize employment of combat power forward of the main battle and security areas, or coordinated fire line. Higher headquarters use sectors to synchronize and coordinate subordinate force engagement areas and allow for mutually supporting fields of fire, which do not require deconfliction between adjacent units. Units treat everything behind the forward line of troops as an AO with its associated responsibilities. Units can subdivide a sector into subordinate areas of operations, zones, or sectors. While there are many other control measures that enable terrain management, for example, position areas for artillery or tactical assembly areas, only AOs, zones, and sectors are part of the assigned area model. Commanders and staffs use AOs when the operation requires a higher level of control. Zones are best for frontline units conducting high-tempo offensive operations characterized by direct fire contact with the enemy and a fluid forward line of troops. Sectors are best for frontline units conducting a defense, making it easier for a higher headquarters to conduct deep operations and for subordinate units to have mutually supporting fires. Mutual support. Commanders and staffs consider mutual support when considering how large an area to assign subordinates. Mutual support is that support which units render each other against an enemy because of their assigned tasks, their position relative to each other and to the enemy, and their inherent capabilities, JP 3-31. In Army doctrine, mutual support is a planning consideration related to force disposition, not a command relationship. Mutual support has two aspects, supporting range and supporting distance. When two units are mutually supporting, their assigned areas are generally contiguous with each other. Units with non-contiguous areas are generally not mutually supporting. Supporting range is the distance one unit may be geographically separated from a second unit, yet remain within the maximum range of the second unit's weapon systems, ADP 3.0. Supporting range depends on available weapon systems, and it is normally the maximum range of the supporting unit's indirect fire weapons, although certain capabilities employed via space and cyberspace can be used at much longer ranges. Terrain, visibility, and weather may limit the supporting range. If one unit cannot effectively or safely fire in support of another, the first may not be in supporting range, even though its weapons have the required range. At higher echelons, communications are also a consideration. If two units cannot effectively coordinate the use of indirect fire, then they may not be considered in supporting range of each other. Supporting distance is the distance between two units that can be traveled in time for one to come to the aid of the other and prevent its defeat by an enemy or ensure it regains control of a civil situation, ADP 3.0. These factors affect supporting distance. Terrain and mobility. Distance. Enemy capabilities, including those employed from the space, cyberspace, air, and maritime domains. Friendly capabilities, including those employed from the space, cyberspace, air, and maritime domains. Refer to Chapter 6 for a greater discussion of mutual support. Note, contiguous boundaries do not imply units are capable of mutual support or that their subordinate units have contiguous assigned areas. Therefore, mutual support between adjacent units and subordinate units must be part of commander dialogue to ensure the formation is assuming risk deliberately and at the right echelon. Area of influence and area of interest. Operational environments are larger than the associated assigned area. They influence and are influenced by factors outside unit boundaries. To account for these factors, commanders typically consider areas of influence and areas of interest relative through all domains and dimensions. An area of influence is an area inclusive of and extending beyond an operational area wherein a commander is capable of direct influence by maneuver, fire support, and information normally under the commander's command or control, JP3O. The ranges of a unit's maneuver and fire's capabilities typically define its area of influence. However, commanders consider all forms of contact they can make with enemy forces when visualizing their area of influence. A unit's area of influence contracts or expands based on the capabilities allocated by the higher headquarters and adjusts as the unit repositions its capabilities on the battlefield. An area of influence is normally larger than its associated assigned area, but it is smaller than its area of interest. Units typically have areas of influence that overlap with adjacent unit-assigned areas. A unit might desire to collect information on or strike enemy forces traversing through an adjacent unit-assigned area. This situation requires control measures to enable friendly forces to maintain pressure on enemy forces while mitigating the risk of fratricide. Understanding an area of influence helps commanders and staffs plan branches and sequels to the current operation in preparation for operations outside of the current assigned area. An area of interest is that area of concern to the commander, including the area of influence, areas adjacent to it, and extending into enemy territory, JP3O. This visualization tool enables commanders and staffs to understand the impact of threats outside their assigned area and how their operation is progressing along with their adjacent and higher units. An area of interest includes those aspects of the domains from which enemy forces can employ capabilities that jeopardize the accomplishment of the mission. The area of interest can shift according to the situation. For example, Army forces track the location of enemy AMD, artillery, and armored formations outside the assigned area whose movement or employment may impact current and future operations. The area of interest also includes adjacent and other friendly forces whose actions or inactions of friendly forces could affect operations. Commanders consider all forms of contact possible with enemy forces and update their area of interest as the situation develops, including the effects of enemy influence and disinformation. An area of interest surrounds an assigned area, extending forward and to the flanks of the assigned area, and overlapping with adjacent unit-assigned areas. Depending on the operation, it may also extend rearwards, especially when enemy forces contest operational and strategic lines of communications. A unit's area of interest is especially important for helping leaders assess risks and maintain situational awareness of factors that will become important as operations progress. It is particularly important that the area of interest account for human, information, and physical dimension factors across all domains. Deep, close, and rear operations. Within assigned areas, commanders organize their operations in terms of time, space, and purpose by synchronizing deep, close, and rear operations. Commanders balance combat power between requirements for deep, close, and rear operations while weighting the main effort to accomplish the mission. An echelon's focus in time, space, and purpose, not necessarily their physical location, determines whether they are deep, close, or rear operations. This model assists commanders and staffs in synchronizing capabilities that reside outside of their unit's assigned area, for example, from air, space, and cyberspace, with operations inside their assigned areas. The degree of convergence that a corps can achieve to set conditions for its subordinate divisions depends on its ability to synchronize close, deep, and rear operations among its subordinate echelons and with the joint force. Divisions and higher echelons typically align their deep, close, and rear operations to corresponding areas due to the scale of forces and physical considerations involved. This facilitates their C2 of forces spread over wide distances whose physical locations do not correspond to the location and purpose of their effects. Typically, divisions and corps assign command posts to enable control of these areas. For example, a division may position an artillery battery in a position area for artillery located in the rear area, but employ its fires in support of close operations. In this case, the rear command post might control the battery's sustainment and protection, but the division main command post will control its priorities for providing indirect fire support. At brigade echelons and below, differentiating between close, deep, and rear may have less utility during large-scale combat operations because of the high tempo, narrow focus, and short planning horizons. At every echelon, however, commanders must understand the relationship among these operations and their combined impact on mission accomplishment. See FM3-94 for more information about deep, close, and rear areas. Deep. Deep operations are tactical actions against enemy forces, typically out of direct contact with friendly forces, intended to shape future close operations and protect rear operations. At the operational level, deep operations influence the timing, location, and enemy forces involved in future battles. At the tactical level, deep operations set conditions for success during close operations and subsequent engagements. Successful deep operations disintegrate the structures and systems that enable enemy operational approaches, isolate enemy close operations from sources of support, and make enemy forces vulnerable to defeat in detail. At both the operational and tactical levels, the principal effects of deep operations focus on an enemy force's freedom of action and the coherence and tempo of their operations. Deep operations strike enemy forces throughout their depth and prevent the effective employment of reserves, C2 nodes, logistics, and long-range fires. Deep operations are inherently joint, since many of the capabilities employed by or in support of Army formations are provided by a joint headquarters or service component. Several activities are typically conducted as part of deep operations. They include deception, ISR and target acquisition, interdiction, by ground or air fires, ground or aerial maneuver, cyberspace forces, special operations forces, or any combination of these. Long-range fires against enemy integrated air defense systems, sustainment nodes, fires capabilities, and echelon follow-on maneuver formations. Electromagnetic warfare. Offensive cyberspace operations and space operations. Military information support operations. Not all activities focused forward of the line of contact are deep operations. Counterfire, for example, primarily supports close operations, even though the targets attacked may be located at great distances from the forward line of troops. Deep operations require detailed planning. Because of the relative scarcity of resources with which to perform these activities, deep operations focus on the enemy vulnerabilities and capabilities most dangerous to the next close operation. Attacks must employ enough combat power to achieve the desired result. This is critical when, as is frequently the case, maintaining momentum in close operations depends on successful prosecution of deep operations. Close. Close operations are tactical actions of subordinate maneuver forces and the forces providing immediate support to them, whose purpose is to employ maneuver and fires to close with and destroy enemy forces. Seizing and defending contested land areas require close operations. Until enemy forces are defeated or destroyed in close operations, they retain the ability to fight and hold ground. At the operational level, close operations comprise the efforts of large tactical units, corps, and divisions to win current battles by closing with and defeating enemy forces after setting favorable terms to do so. At the tactical level, close operations comprise the efforts of smaller tactical units to win current engagements through movement combined with direct and indirect fires while physically in contact with the enemy forces they intend to destroy and defeat. Close operations concentrate overwhelming combat power at the right time and place to create and then exploit windows of opportunity to achieve assigned objectives. Close operations include the deep, close, and rear operations of their subordinate maneuver formations. For example, divisions and separate brigades conduct core close operations. Brigade combat teams, BCTs, are the primary forces conducting division close operations. The positioning of assets and capabilities does not determine whether they are part of the close operation. For example, some reconnaissance and target acquisition units, while located forward near the line of contact, may have a purpose that supports deep operations. Close operations are inherently lethal because they involve direct fire engagements at relatively short ranges with enemy forces seeking to mass direct, indirect, and aerial fires against friendly forces. Deep and rear operations set conditions for the success of close operations. The measure of success of deep and rear operations is their positive impact on increasing the effectiveness and reducing the cost of close operations. Activities are part of close operations if their purpose contributes to defeating committed enemy forces that are or will be in direct physical contact with friendly forces. The activities that comprise close operations include maneuver of subordinate formations, including counterattacks, close combat, including offensive and defensive operations, indirect fire support, including counterfire, close air support, electromagnetic attack, and offensive space and cyber operations against enemy forces in direct physical contact with friendly forces, information collection, sustainment support of committed units. Rear. Rear operations are tactical actions behind major subordinate maneuver forces that facilitate movement, extend operational reach, and maintain desired tempo. This includes continuity of sustainment and C2. Rear operations support close and deep operations. Commanders establish rear operations before they can conduct deep and close operations. At the operational level, rear operations sustain current operations and prepare for the next phase of the campaign or major operation. These operations are distributed, complex, and continuous. At the tactical level, rear operations enable the desired tempo of combat, assuring that friendly forces have the agility to exploit any opportunity. Rear operations typically include 5 broad activities: positioning and moving reserves, positioning and repositioning aviation, fire support, and AMD units, conducting support area operations, securing sustainment and C2 nodes, and controlling tactical unit movement between the division or corps rear boundary and units conducting close operations. Rear operations typically include efforts that consolidate gains to make conditions created by deep and close operations more permanent. All of these activities compete for limited terrain and lines of communications. Division and corps rear command posts are generally responsible for rear operations. There are several considerations for conducting rear operations. They include C2, information collection activities to detect enemy forces, establishment and maintenance of routes, terrain management, movement control, protection of critical friendly capabilities, information activities, infrastructure repair and improvement, defeating bypassed forces and continuing to consolidate gains, minimum essential stability tasks, which are establish civil security, provide immediate needs, access to food, water, shelter, and medical treatment, coordination with host nation and multinational governmental organizations, adjusting to shifts in the unit and subordinate rear boundaries, integration of new units into the division or corps. Enemy deep operations often target friendly rear operations because they are often both vulnerable and essential to friendly mission success. Commanders commit combat power to protect rear operations, but they balance those requirements against those necessary for successful close and deep operations. Units involved in rear operations must protect themselves using both passive and active measures. Commanders and staffs must continuously reevaluate the possibility of more serious threats to rear operations and develop plans to meet them with minimum disruptions to ongoing close operations. Support area operations. Support area operations are a critical part of rear operations. Support area operations are the tactical actions securing lines of communications, bases, and base clusters that enable an echelon's sustainment and command and control. A support area is where units position, employ, and protect base sustainment assets and lines of communications required to sustain, enable, and control operations. Support area operations include sustainment for the echelon and relevant security operations. Support area operations enable the tempo of deep and close operations. Support area operations require detailed planning to coordinate among the various units providing sustainment, protection, and security. A Maneuver Enhancement Brigade, or BCT, typically provides C2 for support area operations for a division or corps due to the level of security, planning, and integration required. Support Area Operations Planning Considerations. Support area operations require detailed planning. Their security is often an economy of force effort. Commanders must balance their need to protect rear operations and tempo with the needs of main effort units committed to close and deep operations. Commanders consider several items when conducting support area operations. They include desired tempo, enemy maneuver and fires units that threaten current and future support area operations, additional forces required to protect the support area, C2 nodes that will occupy the support area, command support relationships between units in the support area, transportation networks, road, rail, inland waterways, and air into and out of the area, protection from enemy indirect fire assets, survivability, dispersion, terrain management, and defensive responsibilities, displacement considerations based upon the overall operation, movement control into, through, and out of the support area, command and control of deep, close, and rear operations. C2 facilitates the freedom to operate, delegate authority, and lead from any point on the battlefield. Plans are the initial basis for action, but commanders must expect substantial changes in the course of an operation and periods of disrupted communications. Leaders allow their subordinates to react to unanticipated situations through the mission command approach to C2. Commanders position command posts where they can best integrate capabilities and synchronize combat power without incurring too much risk from enemy interference. Commanders often position command posts and leaders in locations where they anticipate friction and which are most vital to mission success. Specific mission requirements will dictate how commanders organize and array their command posts, as well as the networks they establish to communicate during the conduct of operations. See ATP 6-0.5 for a detailed discussion of command posts. Staffing, equipping, and organizational concerns vary among echelons of command. In every case, however, the purpose of C2 is to implement the commander's will and synchronize operations in pursuit of the unit's objectives. Army forces are equipped with a variety of command posts, including main command posts, tactical command posts or their equivalents, rear command posts, and mobile command groups. At the corps level and below, every echelon of command has a main command post and a tactical command post. Corps and divisions are also equipped with a rear command post, giving them the flexibility to delegate specific C2 responsibilities to nodes positioned to control deep, close, and rear areas. Main effort, supporting effort, and reserve. Commanders designate a subordinate unit as a main effort when its mission at a given point in time is most critical to overall mission success. Commanders weight the main effort with additional combat power. Typically, commanders shift the main effort one or more times during execution. When commanders designate a unit as the main effort, it receives priority of support and resources to maximize combat power. Commanders establish clear priorities of support, and they shift resources and priorities to the main effort as circumstances and the commander's intent require. The unit that directly accomplishes the mission is usually the main effort when it conducts its mission. Commanders typically designate priority for sustainment to units that they anticipate to be the main effort. This helps maximize the combat power of a unit before it becomes the main effort. Shifting a priority of sustainment to the current main effort might be too late to be effective. A supporting effort is a designated subordinate unit with a mission that supports the success of the main effort, ADP-30. Commanders resource supporting efforts with the minimum assets necessary to accomplish the mission. Forces often realize success of the main effort through success of supporting efforts. A main effort in an earlier phase can be a supporting effort for a main effort in a later phase. A reserve is that portion of a body of troops that is withheld from action at the beginning of an engagement to be available for a decisive movement, ADP-3-90. A reserve is an uncommitted force, and it does not normally have a full suite of combat multipliers available to it until it is committed. It is the echelon's main effort once it is committed. Commanders constitute a reserve and base the size of the reserve on the level of uncertainty in the current tactical situation. Commanders consider survivability, mobility, and the most likely mission when positioning their reserve. While commanders can assign their reserve a wide variety of tasks through planning priorities to perform on commitment, a reserve remains prepared to accomplish other missions. The primary purposes for a reserve are to exploit success, counter tactical reverses that threaten the integrity of the friendly forces' operations, retain the initiative. Once a reserve is committed, units reconstitute a new one whenever possible. When a commander assigns a unit the mission of being the reserve, the commander gives the unit a list of planning priorities. Typically, a reserve has no more than 3 planning priorities because of the time it takes to adequately prepare for each priority.